Welcome into another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am chatting with Lobo Tigre, also known as Louis James, but now we are going by Lobo Tigre, your actual name there, Lobo. And he is the writer of The Independent Speculator, also has a new service coming out that we will discuss a little bit later. First and foremost, though, let's look at the gold market here, Lobo, because, well, we had gold correct pretty significantly into the month end and quarter end just yesterday. And even as we opened up the market today, gold was down right around that 1460 level, even dropped a little under 1460. But then we got that weak ISM number out of the US. And then all of a sudden we saw gold pop back up. And it is right at about 1483, 1484 right now. How are you playing this gold correction and now gold rebound?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said there, but it's important. But first, it's good to be back on the show. It's been a while. Hello, everybody out there. And what a great moment, because we've had such a great run with precious metals this year. And that's the first thing to keep in mind. It's like we're having a great year. Please don't complain about the correction. It's perfectly normal. Nothing goes up in a straight line. This was to be expected. And I certainly wrote guidance along those lines for my readers, even my free readers of the Free Speculators Digest that I put out every Saturday. I warned people that there's likely to be a correction. Nothing goes up in a straight line. And I said, you know, I know what I want to buy if we get one. So putting my money where my keyboard is, that's exactly what I did. I have averaged down already, and I have bought in on some stocks that got away from me in the sort of sideways wobbling that we had with gold since the 1500 breakout and the, you know, near reaches to 1550. But there's one silver stock in particular. I'm very keen on silver with its extra leverage. It's more volatility compared to gold. So there's a silver stock that I went ahead and bought a first stake in, and I said, guys, you know, we'll probably get a bigger correction. I want my foot in the door, so that if it takes off, I'm good. But if we get a bigger correction, I really want to double down more on this stock. So when gold really broke below 1500 significantly, and you know, went off a little bit of a cliff yesterday with the quarter end, and you know, the gold week in China, all these things that, or even just the technicals, right? Once it started heading towards 1450, that could have become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it might be doing that right now if the ISM numbers hadn't turned things around this morning. But the part of the story that I really want to stress for the audience, though, is that I put my money where my mouth is, or my keyboard, as the case may be. And I put a stink bid in yesterday for this stock. I was hoping to average down very aggressively. And I didn't quite get filled. I put an alert out to subscribers of the Independent Speculators, told them what I was doing. And I'm very happy to tell you that a number of people wrote back, oh, I already did it. They didn't even wait for me to tell them, hey, this is an opportunity. Take advantage of it. You know, there's no good reason for gold to be selling off. So I'm very proud of my readers. They're good, solid contrarians. They get it, and they don't even necessarily wait for me anymore to tell them what to do. I love that. I didn't get filled on my stock, though. So this morning when I got up and gold was trending lower this morning, I was thinking, oh, great, I might get filled after all. And the darn thing came within a penny of my target entry point. And then the ISM news came out. And the gold and silver took off. I didn't get filled. You know, was I being stubborn? Should I have budged a penny? Well, I already have my foot in the door. I don't need to chase a stock that I'm trying to average down on. And you know what? It could dip again later this week. We saw last week that with the impeachment shenanigans, I should let you get a question in here. But just look at what the price of gold is doing in concert with the other markets. It's really quite interesting. We had, oh, no, Trump might actually get impeached. You know, sell everything, right? The markets go down, gold goes up. And then we have Trump gets impeached. Oh, no big deal. It's just politics. The Senate will never convict. Oh, buy everything, you know, sell gold. And then, oh, there's a whistleblower. Sell everything. You know, we had such a yo-yo last week with really, you know, nothing really actually changed except for some headlines at the time. You know, everybody knew that was coming. Everybody knows the Senate's not going to convict. It's all such a circus. So this week we have other things that I think are extraneous, you know, that haven't really changed anything. The fundamental reality is, I think, that the U.S. is headed for recession. The global economy is weak. The money printing, the easy money, has already started in the EU and the U.S. The Fed has made moves in that direction. I mean, this, all of this is very, very strong indications of what's to come. And it's ultimately bullish for gold. And that's why I was so confident. You know, gold's falling off a cliff yesterday. Instead of saying, oh, damn, you know, I said, oh, great. I can buy these stocks that are on my shopping list. So that's what I'm working on. That's how I see the current circumstance.
I find it very interesting. You're not alone in, I think, putting out some stink bids in some of those good companies that you like. I've heard that before from a couple other of the guests on our show, plus some other considerations to even what you said there. This is still a very headline-driven market. So day after day, we are just continuing to see volatility, and that volatility is in the precious metals as well. But overall, there is still this flight to safety that we are seeing that is very much in the early innings. This current correction, though, for gold, it didn't get down to that 1450 level. It came close, about $8 off. Do you think that that's still a level that investors should expect? Not being bearish, but still a level that everyone is watching.
Well, I'm not a technical guy, so I'm really probably the wrong one to ask that. I'm just aware because ultimately things... prices are determined by buyers and sellers in the marketplace. Now, some of those will be watching the technicals, and that does create self-fulfilling prophecy potential on some things. But as we saw today, right, some new variable comes in, and it changes the decisions of these buyers and sellers in the market, and the price reacted. So there could easily be more bad news, or more, depending on your perspective, you know, good news or good for precious metals news out there that could send gold screaming north tomorrow. I mean, just some escalation of hostilities in the Middle East or China or with Russia, or, you know, some much bigger smoking gun on the political front in the U.S. or Brexit, or just, you know, things getting worse in Germany, in particular in the EU. There's so many, you can't even call them black swans because we see them out there. It's more like gray leading towards white kind of swans. It's just such a flock of them. That, you know, I would absolutely not, I would not get out or look to buy in lower. If there's something I want and I don't have an initial stake, at least in it, then I'll just buy on the next daily fluctuation. And then if we do get, you know, should we be so lucky that we do get a bigger correction, goes down to 1450 or close to even 1400 as possible. These things can be very volatile. I don't expect that, but it's possible, and I would absolutely buy that event if that happened. You know, I have cash in my brokerage accounts now waiting for that possibility. And if I don't get it, my existing position should do fine. And if I do get it, then I would have no hesitation to act on that.
All right, very much a bull market strategy, buy the dips and pick out the companies that you really like. Any insights into, let's say, some of the silver companies that you like out there? Are they explorers? Are they producers? What do you think is the sweet spot for investors that also like that increased leverage that silver provides in general precious metal terms?
I see gold and silver in terms of what kind of companies I like is much the same. And it doesn't really matter if you've got somebody that's drilling something off and just keeps getting bigger, whether it's gold or silver, the stock responds. And if you've got somebody building their first mine, the pre-production sweet spot are very much a favorite strategy of mine, investment strategy that's worked out well for me. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's gold or silver, they do extremely well. The main consideration is just that there's so few silver stories compared to gold. I mean, real silver stories, not, you know, a zinc mine or something that needs the base metal to which the silver is a credit to do well. So they're just you have to be very choosy there because there's so few of them. You know, anybody can slap the name silver on there. It doesn't really necessarily make it a silver company. You know, it, because there's a, I think there's a bit of a premium. So I just think you have to be choosy. You have to check all of the P's that Doug Casey taught us, you know, kick the rocks hard, tear apart those financial statements, you know, query the management team, you know, Google the board of directors, everything, you know, really do your due diligence. Because I do think sometimes something puts some company, some junior puts silver on the name of something and they get a higher premium than they deserve. And that makes it more dangerous.
Yeah, be selective. And that's still the name of the game for this market, because it's not just a broad-based recovery in terms of the stocks. I do want to get your opinions on a recent transaction in the sector that wasn't looked too favorably on. This kind of ties in with that new service I mentioned on the onset called My Take. This is where subscribers can email you with direct company questions. Let's talk about that Osisko Gold Royalties taking over Barkerville. What's your initial comment on this deal?
Well, this can be an example of what My Take does. It's the publication, as you said, is about not in-depth research. It's not an entire issue devoted to one company that somebody has asked for or readers have asked about. It's a whole dozen or more quick executive summary analysis of equities of interest, which can include requests from clients and so on. But I need to stress it is a newsletter, because you said people could write in and get my take on something. I won't answer them individually, because remember, I'm only a newsletter writer. I'm not allowed to give individuals advice. So I can't write back to you and say, oh, hey, this is what I think about the stock you asked about. I'm not a broker, I'm not a CFA. I can't do that. But as a lowly newsletter writer, I can publish my financial opinions. That's a First Amendment issue in the United States. I can publish my financial issues to everybody. So I give my takes to everybody who subscribes. It's very affordable. It's $25 a month. It's a good entry-level letter. And it offers guidance. I think of it as essential guidance, no fluff. But to get to your question, and Osisko, I have not torn this one apart. So this is a very quick take here. But I understand why the market hasn't been wildly enthusiastic. Now, I have to say before I go there, though, that I have huge respect for Sean Rusin, all the Osisko guys. Obviously, these are very successful in the industry, experts. They know what they're doing. I would certainly not, short them or say that they're making a mistake or don't know what they're doing. That said, I do understand the market's hesitance here, because Osisko Royalties is a royalty company, right? And now we're taking over this development asset, and maybe we're going to build a mine here, which sounds more like something that the Osisko mining guys should be doing. And it changes the story. Now, Osisko Royalties already owned a large chunk of it. They had an investment in it. And, in for a penny, in for a pound, I can see where management can say, we can do this better. We can unlock value here for shareholders. If we take this over and we apply the Osisko know-how, we can make this thing really go. We can add a lot of value for shareholders. I absolutely get that. And they may be right. If anybody can do it, it would be the Osisko guys. That having been said, I certainly understand. So that's the plus. The minus is that it's no longer a pure royalty play. If I'm the kind of investor who wants to own a royalty stock and not worry about all the technical difficulties and changes in regulations, or suddenly an endangered mosquito gets discovered on the property, right, and you're out of business. there's all these risks that come with actually getting into mining itself that you don't have to worry about so much as a royalty company. And people buy royalty plays for that very reason. It's better than just buying the underlying commodity, but not as risky as buying a miner, or certainly not an exploration company or a development stage project, which has more risks than a producer. Not as much risk as exploration, but more risk than a producer, right? So they've added risk. I understand why Mr. Market would respond. So my take here is that if I'm interested in owning a stock purely on the royalty basis, then I'm less positive about this company. If I'm a value investor and I see that the Osisko guys, if anybody can unlock the value here, Barkerville has a long and colorful history, let's just say, and so that leaves a lingering aura, which again, if anybody can dispel it and unlock value, it would be the Osisko guys. So I can see the value. Investors saying, oh, well, that's great. I can see the royalty guys saying, that's not what I'm in here for. That's my take.
Now, that long and checkered past, let's call it, from the Barkerville story, do you think that was a big contributor to this stock, or at least as that management team was trying to say, that stock undervalued compared to what their current updated resource was? Do you think that was kind of a lingering cloud over the company?
I do. I mean, it may not make sense. It's changed quite a bit ever since those embarrassing days of the retracted resource statement from prior management. You know, it's all changed. It's not the same thing anymore. But once something like that happens, people, they hear the name and they tune out. Right? They don't want to know. They don't want to hear about new management. I mean, it's a lot of people will, but a lot of people won't. You know, they just hear the name, not listening. They go on to something else. So I do think that's something that they'll have to show me, don't tell me, right? When they build a mine and it makes tons of money, then I think you will, that history of Barkerville, just, you know, that'll be something in the colorful past, and that's it.
Exactly. And you know what? Hopefully they can get that thing functioning, producing profitably. And then, yes, it does turn out to be a good story for the overall market. But let's end with a comment there. A lot of people are saying we need more M&A in the sector. This is an M&A deal that, unfortunately, has disappointed a lot of people. How does that leave other investors that are looking at this sector? What do you think that leaves them feeling?
This may sound terrible, but it doesn't matter how you feel. I mean, Mr. Market doesn't give a boop about how you feel and what we want to happen, or what will hurt our feelings or make us happy. You know, that doesn't drive share prices. So put that out of your mind. As a strategy, though, takeovers are an excellent thing to keep in mind in the resource sector. They provide exit points, great liquidity at exit points, either in cash takeovers or just, you know, when a takeover happens and a premium is offered, and whether you stick around for the takeover or use that as a liquidity event to exit at a, you know, handsome premium over your initial stake, it's a great way to add leverage to your investments in the resource sector. And it's certainly something I look for. I no longer have access to my track record at KC Research, but over the years, I predicted a lot of takeovers, and it was something that resulted in a lot of happy endings for readers. So I think it's certainly a ball to keep your eye on. But at this particular time, it's one that you may have to be patient with, because, you know, we had these mega mergers last year, Newmont Goldcorp, Barrick. You know, these big players are in the they're still in the phase of divesting assets. They're looking to sell everything that's on the bottom rungs of their new larger ladders, right? They're not looking to acquire. And that feeds down the food chain there, you know, the mid-tiers and so on. They may be looking to acquire some of the things that the big boys are selling. And they're not, you know, therefore going to be looking at juniors. And that makes it harder for the juniors to even get JVs, let alone get taken out with their discoveries. So I think right now we're seeing a slowdown in M&A activity of the sort that investors in junior resource companies like to see. But I think that goes away as soon as this, you know, major M&A activity is digested. And ultimately, I think it results in a bigger rebound. Anytime you stop something that is a normal part of the market process that the market wants to happen, and you stop doing it for a while, then the interest comes back with gusto afterwards. So I think we will see a lot of terrific takeovers, maybe not so much this year, but probably starting in 2020, we'll see it pick up again.
All right, Lobo, interesting comments. Thanks for sharing some of your insights on that recent deal and some of your portfolio strategies. Lobo, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time today. Everyone, click that link below. Go visit Lobo's website to find out more about his newsletter, The Independent Speculator. Thanks, Lobo.
Thank you.